Hi there. It's time I tell you whatever happened with our Italian beer brewing neighbors and what the wholesale side of Rebel Bread looks like overall. My name is Zach Martinucci, and this is Against the Grain. Last summer, we heard about these Italians that were moving in next door. I guess we were the ones moving in next door, because we were just preparing to open the bakery, and they had been building this brand new restaurant and brewery for 2 years at this point. And for a while, it seemed that that was all anybody really knew about them. Then we learned they were brewing Eno beers, wine grape-based beers, and featuring an authentic Italian full restaurant menu with homemade cheese, salumi, gelato, pasta, and bread. I was skeptical at first, for a very specific reason, actually, because they chose to make this typical saltless Tuscan bread that I think, because of the history behind the bread, could have hinted at some stubborn neighbors that wouldn't want to get along. I encourage you to listen to the fourth episode in the second season of this podcast called What If They Don't Want My Salt, where I get into the full backstory about this bread and what it might have said about our relationship. Over at Liberati, our neighbor Eno Beer Brewery in Osteria, their doors opened the same month we did, and if you listen to that previous episode about the saltless bread, you'll hear that we actually became quick friends. We found that we stand for the same mix of tradition and innovation in food, and we love to go over there for beer, they come over for pastries and bread in the mornings, and Federica, their executive baker and a friend of ours, often joins us on our porch for a coffee break. There was this one day a few months ago when they had hosted Paolo Bartolomucci, professor at the Italian Academy of Milk, who did a brief training residency to teach the Liberati kitchen team how to make cheese. On his last day in Denver, Liberati featured Paolo in a cheese-making seminar that they opened up to the entire Denver restaurant community. While our relationship was never strictly competitive, we're quite different businesses after all, this quirky and charming Italian cheesemaking lecture really won us over, and we've been especially rooting for Liberati ever since. That month, we were considering upgrading some of our equipment, and so we reached out to them, the masters of big equipment, to see if they had any advice on importing an oven. The owner instead asked if, instead of buying our own, we would want to borrow theirs. They don't use it all day, and he thought it would go to good use and be a good neighbor gesture to offer us space in their oven throughout the week. I was shocked. Not at them, because I've learned how generous they are. Just at the idea that anyone would offer to share such a valuable piece of equipment, not expecting anything in return. And I'm really glad we became friends. Since our openings in October, we've watched each other pivot. Us, of course, as you're hearing in these updates, by taking on different accounts, by trying our hands at catering, by expanding the bread school. And them, by changing up their hours each season, transitioning some members of their management team, and most recently, switching up their menu. I know that was hard for them, because they had to move away from the provincial Italian menu that they cared so much about, that I'm sure they had dreamed up months before the restaurant opened, and that people weren't really understanding. In exchange, they've introduced a more recognizable Italian restaurant menu. Part of that change included our friend, their baker, Federica, coming into Rebel Bread one morning to tell us, "I have a proposition for you. Will you bake our bread?" I was both surprised and honored, because I know they took so much pride in making their own, and yet they trusted us to do it. "But that's what you do," I said to Federica, and she explained to me that in their most recent pivot, she didn't use that word, but that's what it was, Federica would be working as a chef in their kitchen and wouldn't have time to bake bread. But they loved ours. They recognized it was pretty Italian, actually, and asked if we would do it. And then we both got really excited about the chance to collaborate and make things using each other's expertise and ideas and tools, even. So for a few months now, in the strangest turn of events, we've been baking the bread for Liberati. I have access to their kitchen and get permission to use their oven since we were testing it out for a while, and we now collaborate as neighbors and fellow bakers on something they used to only do by themselves. We make an olive rosemary sourdough that they serve to every table, and these giant ciabatta slabs finished with olive oil and sea salt that are sliced and served alongside salads and charcuterie boards. It's fun to watch them get busier as they grow, and as they do things like happy hour and brunch and feel like they're fitting in more with the way we do things in Denver. And when we have to make them more and more bread, even when it becomes a production challenge for us. I also love that they serve sourdough, because I think it speaks just as much as the Tuscan bread before it. You might remember that the saltless pane toscano stands for the deep history and hard-headedness of the Florentine people. Sourdough, however, tells a different story. The thing about sourdough, and this is just my perspective and it's going to be controversial, is that the origin or heritage of your sourdough starter, your levain, your mother yeast, doesn't really matter for the flavor of your bread. We love telling the stories behind them. We love to talk about their age and where they've been and who's taken care of them throughout their lives. There's a shrine at San Francisco's Boudin Bakery dedicated to the woman who saved their starter in the 1906 earthquake fires. We often care, very much, and so our yeast story is typically quite important to our own baking story. My San Francisco-born yeast, however, isn't really a San Francisco strand anymore. That colony of yeast and bacteria has become the local Denver version as it eats our flour and water, and it lives here. And the way your starter tastes has so much more to do with what you feed it, in which quantities, and how often. In other words, whether your bread is buttermilky and creamy sour, or vinegary tangy sour, whether the flavor is strong or mild, subtle or pronounced, all of that comes from how you take care of your sourdough starter, the choices you make, and how consistent you are in your care. So what a shift from the table bread being this stubborn Tuscan loaf to a more flexible, forgiving sourdough bread that becomes what you make of it, that depends on your care and your choices to take on its flavor. Isn't that great? And very telling, I think, of the relationship between and culture within our two companies right now. A neighborly story told, if you will, in bread. And you're gonna love this. We even make rolls for Liberati. Okay, I call them buns because, as you know, we do not make rolls. But they're our friends, and they needed a small, round bread for their new summer sandwich menu. So I said no, try loaves, and that didn't work. And then I made them square rolls using their square pans, and that didn't go over that well. And so we settled on our baguette dough bagel without the hole in the middle. A baguette bagel bun. Which as a concept is causing its own confusion, but I do love that we were able to accommodate and that they were flexible in what we made for them, as it even got me to pivot away from no rolls so we could help each other out. Wholesale as a whole is changing. We started with maybe 5 or 8 accounts within a few months of opening, doing almost exclusively brioche-based pastries, plus some other coffee shop snacks, with maybe 1 account receiving sourdough for toast. Now, with 11 accounts, we make 350 danishes each week and 200 loaves of sourdough. Look, we're not a big bakery, but if you think about that, a danish is 1 serving, and a whole loaf of sourdough makes 8 to 12 slices of toast. That's thousands of slices of toast. The low thousands, but still, it's a lot of bread. The new accounts that we take on are most often majority bread or entirely bread accounts. So as we think about where our market really is, both who we're serving right now and the kind of work we want to be doing, it feels like a pivot away from pastry and into bread. That was the idea the entire time. But I'm trying to think critically about our pivot right now, so that it can inform the kinds of equipment upgrades and marketing strategies and hiring decisions and all the other choices we'll have to make sooner or later as our company grows in a certain direction. We'll always make some coffee shop pastries, but I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to make the same amount we made back in August, while the bread side of things is what really takes off. If that's what we decide, or makes sense, I want to prepare for that. We're still considering a bigger oven and eventually a bigger bakery. We bought a bigger mixer a few weeks ago. It's somewhere over the Atlantic right now on its way from Italy, of course. And I should say as well that bigger isn't necessarily the goal here. Bigger is helpful right now with mixers and fridge space as we play around with growing. But we'll also have to consider if we even want to be a big wholesale bakery, because prioritizing retail or the bread school or maybe just baking for events would each take our production and our company in a different direction. For now, we're enjoying baking the neighbor's bread as it helps us figure out how to be a bakery that works with restaurants, that makes lots of bread, that gets to collaborate with others, and that has to offer some kind of bun, as we decide if this is the kind of work that we really want to be doing. In the midst of growing, I'm reminded of what I love about our small size. To tell the whole story here, this week we lost 2 wholesale accounts. That's rough, and it doesn't happen often, maybe just because we're new, but also because we haven't seen much turnover in general, and our accounts are very good about telling us if they have concerns and working through any issues, rather than just dropping us. We're not looking to add dozens more either. This week was the first time that happened, though. For better or worse, I've been saying for months that it was only a matter of time until this one coffee shop was done with us. Our product just didn't seem like a great fit for them, mainly in terms of look, of aesthetic, and knowing the kinds of vendors with whom they typically work. They like croissants, which is fine, so do I, but that's not what we do, so we've parted ways. The other was a series of little challenges that really exposed themselves after someone in the equation lost their temper and lashed out a bit unprofessionally, and it wasn't a great situation. It's caused us to reevaluate some things, including our priorities and where we want to be working right now, since our little shop only has so much bandwidth. In both cases, it's rough to lose business, but I love looking at our short roster of accounts and seeing that we have friendly, supportive, professional relationships with everyone on that list. Brands who we know love what we do, and we feel the same about them. I wouldn't trade that for just more business. And that's something to consider with our current growing pains. Some updates for you. We hired a new baker. They start next week, so you'll hear about that later on. Our graffiti aperitivo event with Attimo Wine last week was a huge success. The backstory here is that new friends of ours and the founders of Snooze are opening an urban winery downtown using imported Italian grapes. The winery is about to be built in an old pawn shop, and so before the demolition began this week, they hosted a graffiti party for friends in the community to literally leave their mark on the walls before they tore them down. We made an aperitivo spread, an Italian happy hour, with ciabatta and tomato butter, and panzanella, bread salad, and marinated eggplant carpaccio, and potato gnocchi and basil pesto, with gnocchi rolled right in front of you, meaning I personally rolled 10 pounds of gnocchi dough at the event for 60 people, while Renee shuffled them away to cook and dress them in pesto. It's little moments like this where I roll 5 times as much gnocchi dough as I've ever done in my life that I recognize what an absurd and wonderful job I've created for myself. This whole week, I felt like I've had 2 weeks worth of work on my plate. I really enjoy all my work, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't like a break. This weekend, Ryan and Alana both teach baking classes. I lied last week, my holla class is next weekend. Next week, I personally move to a new apartment. The following day, we have the first day of farmers market season. I'm only partially prepared and am terrified, but it's going to work out. Then our new baker starts training, we make bread for our landlord's son's bar mitzvah, and then I teach a brand new challah class. That's what I mean by all good things and too many things. Here's to the week ahead, however busy or chill yours will be, and we'll catch up at the end of it all next Sunday. I'll talk to you then. This song was All You've Been Waiting For by Jesse Villa.